America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining us, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Teresa Sammons, and Chris Logie. Say hi, guys.
Hey.
Hello.
And that's also my dog in the background. You can hear with his squeaky little bark.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. So this episode is going to be for September 14th, 2019. Man, it is... Time flies by fast when you get our age, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
I mean, it feels like it's still July.
Yeah.
But I mean, granted, I live in Georgia, so...
Yeah.
It was 90 yesterday.
It was 96 today.
It keeps going from like 85 to 50 here. I just can't keep up.
I'm hot, I'm cold. I'm hot, I'm cold. I don't know what I'm doing.
I'm freezing, I'm on fire. I'm freezing, I'm on fire.
It's like nature has menopause or some crap.
Yeah.
Kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
And it's artificially induced. But yeah, fortunately, it's supposed to start cooling off next week.
Cool.
It's not going to be until like Thursday, but whatever. Anytime it gets back down to the 80s is something I consider
a win.
Yeah, right. Win.
Especially since last week, where it basically hovered around 100 for the whole week.
Oh, screw that.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. So 14. On today's show, amongst other things, we got the usual shenanigans from Washington we have to talk about. There was also the third debate for the Democratic presidential nomination.
Mm-hmm.
And that got pretty heated. It was the first time that Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden were on the same stage together.
Mm.
So as you can, and Bernie was there with them. So basically they just spent the whole... like 3 hours tag teaming Biden.
Oh my god.
But other than that, we've also got some other stuff. We got some entertainment news, including who's going to be in the cast for the rebooted Suicide Squad.
Oh.
Is it a complete reboot?
They're calling it the Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
All right.
They're basically trying to forget that the other one existed.
Yeah. Even though that one actually won an Oscar.
Somehow.
You know that thing that happened with the college admission scandal?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we'll be talking about that. But amongst other things, a certain network for women has already made the movie version. And they've got the trailer out now.
Oh my god.
Oh no. British Parliament is now officially suspended.
Yeah.
For the next couple of weeks, I think.
That's a thing.
Mm-hmm. Which, depending on how you look at it, it may have been either the worst thing, or it may have actually ended up being a brilliant move in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And a self-inflicted wound on Boris Johnson. We'll be talking about all that and more on this episode of Let's Weekend. So, start us off as always, Phil. What have you been up to this week?
So, I'm still going through Oathbringer. I've got a little under 5 hours left in that audiobook.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 55-hour audiobook, so, yeah.
Woo! Nice!
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm getting through that. Basically, the last 5 hours is one gigantic clusterfuck.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time I probably missed a lot, so I'm just rereading, listening to it again, and trying to pick up on stuff that I missed before. And yeah, there was quite a bit of it so far. So that's still enjoyable. He's going to need to do something, well, to top what he did for the next book. But it's going a little on the anime side now, seriously.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's gone full anime. One of the characters has gone Super Saiyan.
Yep.
So, yeah, that's a thing.
Yeah.
But apart from that, well, I've been playing a lot of PC Building Simulator. And I mean, not a lot of it. I think I've sunk about 30 hours into this so far. Yeah. It turns out I like making PCs. And as it turns out now, I'm kind of, most of the orders I tend to get in my inbox seem to be new PC builds. Get a few repairs here and there, a few upgrades here and there, but it seems like the majority of the stuff that I'm getting asked to do are PC builds, and you have to figure out whether the work you're going to be doing is worth the budget that they're giving you, picking the parts and all that stuff. It's all stuff that I love to do, so it's just the game that feeds into all of the crap that I normally like to do. So, yeah, it's a great game, and you can get it on everything now, so... Now you can play PC Building Simulator on your Nintendo Switch, which just seems strange to me, but you could do that.
I know.
So, and that's been pretty much it for me, but Teresa, Brandon,
Teresa, whoever. Yeah, Teresa.
I'll go next. I forgot that we had watched Season 3 of The Good Place, but indeed we had. So we actually kind of recapped it. We... fast forwarded a little bit through the first couple of episodes, and then we just flat out rewatched. We just rewatched. It was great. And as it turns out, we had missed the last two episodes. So, like where that left off, interested to see what's going to happen in season four. And then we went and revisited the IT crowd because, come on, I mean,
have you tried turning it off and on again?
You know, it never gets turned off though. It's the problem. So yeah, this is probably like my sixth watch through of IT Crowd. It's ridiculous. And we let the kid watch with us. So he's learning a lot of shit. He's like, you let me watch this, but you won't let me watch stand-up. You know what, dude? I was watching Dave Chappelle the other day. Get out of the room. You're not watching that. And that was good. I think you guys were talking about that. I think, Chris, weren't you talking about that a couple weeks ago?
What is that?
Chappelle's new stand-up that he has on Netflix.
I haven't seen it.
Sticks and Stones.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, I enjoyed that. A few things I'm like, oh, he should not have said that. But, you know, that's kind of his thing. So, as an aside, yes, I watched that as well. But I've been playing Kingdom Two Crowns, and it's mostly because I can play it one-handed. And, you know, I've been working, and my wrist is completely shot.
Mm-hmm.
But the past few days I have managed to log into Final Fantasy and check out my auctions and go to the Gold Saucer. And it's nice to be able to do that, but I can't play. It sucks. So yeah, I have to play things that are only one-handed at the moment because, you know, sitting there working in Illustrator and InDesign all day takes a toll. But we've been watching some of Star Wars movies. We watched Rogue One and Solo again. We've seen them before. Yeah. It's good to watch again. And then finally, I've been tortured by Apple. I got pissed off at my note because of fingerprints and battery. And I feel so shit that he's saying that. So I sold it way quicker than I figured it would sell, and I had literally nothing. So I got a used iPhone XR for the purpose of giving it to my mother when I'm done, because I'm not keeping it. And let me tell you guys, it's a piece of flaming shit. Please don't email us, Apple fanboys, but this is a piece of shit budget phone. And it's a $750 budget phone. Fuck no, I didn't pay that for it. But I will say the size is beautiful. It's very easy to hold and to manage, and the screen to body ratio is brilliant. But a lot of other phones have that shit going for them too. And the battery is fucking phenomenal, but it's got this crappy, makes me want to sit down and cry, ugly LCD display. And I can really, 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 really tell that it has like maybe, I don't know, 16 bits of RAM because it closes all my shit. Oh my God. It closes all my shit. And my cat, so much she's going to meow about it too.
Yeah. So you're going for the Pixel 4, basically.
Oh yeah, that's all I'm doing is hanging out for the Pixel 4. Yeah. And it may be that I'm hanging out for everybody selling their Pixel 3 in prep for the Pixel 4. But yeah, I'm I am a salty, unhappy little bitch about this right now. Oh, I am so pissed off at this phone. It's just so pissed off at it. And guess what? It's a fingerprint magnet, too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But I also got AirPods, and they're horrible. They hurt. I feel like my ears are bruised. The only good thing about them is that they pause when you take them out of your ear, but so do a lot of other things, too.
Yeah.
So, all in all, cannot recommend. Yeah. Cannot recommend. And if anybody is an Apple fan, fucking skip the 10R. It's not worth it. It's shitty.
Mm-hmm. Well, now the 11 is now, it's basically the 10R.
Yeah.
Now they're just calling it the 11.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Ugh, and the pictures suck. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. And the tracking on it, the GPS tracking sucks. I don't know how people are playing Pokemon Go with these phones. I don't fucking know.
Well, they're not doing anything else.
Yeah, apparently not, because as soon as you go over to check your text, Pokemon Go crashes or closes or whatever. Just like, fuck this noise. So, yeah, unhappy, and let's just see how long I can manage to hang on, and maybe there'll be some good deals on Pixel 4.
Right.
Reports are like right now with the Pixel 3 that's now running Android 10. Battery life has gone up to like 2 days.
You know, I had great freaking battery life with my Pixel 2 XL.
Yeah.
Like, great. I plugged it in almost every 2 days. And I was rocking that bitch this spring.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Pat's joined us now. So, yes. All right. So, Pat, you joined us just in time. What have you been up to this week?
Oh, well, I finally took the plunge and got Marvel Unlimited for my phone because I don't remember if it was on the show or just before or after we had been recording, but Lee had told me about how Marvel Unlimited is a good complement to whatever you might be using to buy current, you know, within the past 6 months comics. Mm-hmm. And so I had $10 burning a hole in my pocket. I decided to go ahead and take a plunge on it, and I am thrilled with it, to be honest with you. It doesn't have Marvel's entire back catalog on there.
Mm-hmm.
As I found out when I tried going through the archive of What If issues, but it does have a very extensive database, and it's been keeping me entertained. I've gone back and read some of my favorite story arcs from years gone by and stuff that I had just missed out on for financial issues. I'm thrilled with it. It's definitely earning my $10 a month. So
nice.
Yeah, and that's it's going along well with the current House of X Powers of 10 miniseries, which only has 4 weeks left, and holy shit. Just, I'm really hanging on for Wednesday because that's where we're going to find out what the results were of Xavier's No More moment, which was very reminiscent of Wanda's No More Mutants moment at the end of House of M, which led, of course, to the decimation. And so it'll be interesting to see what the effects are of that. And I'm starting to get a sense of what that very first scene in House of X was with Xavier basically extracting these sort of pod people from the Krakoa plants was all about, because if this is the timeline that they're going to be going forward with, then they kind of have to at this point. I'm not going to say much more because that would spoil some shit, but yeah, House of X number 4 was a hell of a finish and a hell of a cliffhanger. So that's kind of the only way that's going to explain this away. But I still kind of suspect that that moving forward, they're going to be using the 11th timeline and not the 10th. But we'll see. Other than that, Netflix has effectively ruined me.
Uh-oh.
Yes, I was just flipping through random shows that looked interesting, and I saw what looked like a Japanese drama that really sounded like the kind of thing that I would write. And Teresa, you're familiar with the kind of themes that I tend to touch on. Indeed. In my own writing. So I started up and get to my couch, and it's a fucking reality show. And I'm already on my couch.
Yeah. Well, you're stuck then, right?
It's like, yep.
Oh my god, how bad did it get?
Actually, it wasn't that bad. It still did a good job of touching into the spirit of the sort of things that I write, but even though it was strictly reality-based, but... I don't know. I feel kind of dirty for having enjoyed it. And yeah, I'm just going to leave it at that. Finally, my return in earnest to Shadowbringers continues. Two out of three of my characters have over 30 million gil to play with. So that's nice. And other than that, well, NHL 20 came out, so I've been playing that this weekend, and I'm actually going to start streaming it here in the very near future, because one of my friends really really thinks highly of my hockey IQ, and so I've agreed to kind of start doing a streaming series built around NHL 20. That shows me dealing with various real-life situations around the league. So what would I personally do about the garbage fire that is the Edmonton Oilers? Or how would I fix the Buffalo Sabres? How would I draft an expansion team? Things like that. And so the great thing about NHL 20 is that I can explore that and watch it play out after I do. And as I do, so, and all the while, I'm not actively controlling players on the ice while these games are playing out. All I'm doing is handling managerial stuff. So I can also shoot the shit with viewers while it's happening. Or if somebody comes into the stream chat and they're new to hockey, then I can field questions about that. And, I'm looking forward to doing that sort of thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. So,
all right. Cool. So, Chris, what about you?
So this week has just been very busy for me. So not a ton here, but, the thing I watched on Netflix is Carolyn Tuesday, which is the new show from, the director of Cowboy Bebop and, Samurai Champloo. And in contrast to like those shows, this is a show about, two girls who kind of come into contact with each other through happenstance and kind of decide that they're going to start a band together. And it's very kind of pop music kind of band.
I would have never pegged this as a Sunrise series, seeing the preview on Netflix.
Yeah, it's really well done. There's one song. At a certain point, they decide, because they're trying to, get to like a level of fame to start getting gigs and all that, and they kind of get foiled. It's at every pass, so they go on to this show's version of American Idol, and it's set up like a tournament because it's an anime.
Yeah.
At a certain point, and there are some really fun acts. Like there's a duo called, I forget what they're called. It's two old guys, like 90-year-old guys, who seem very out of touch with everything, and then they start playing and they're like a death metal band sort of thing. Like,
I love everything about that.
Yeah. And there's a band that shows up. I'm not going to say the name, but they have one of the most amazing songs I've ever heard that you would not expect. I was sort of watching it and listening to it, and then I turned over. I was like, what the fuck are these lyrics that they're singing right now? One of those things where, like, all right, this might be the greatest song in anime history, sort of thing. And it ends pretty well for the first season. It's only 10 episodes, so it's not too long. Music's been pretty good so far, and yeah, I like the characters and all that. And kind of the surprise that you have not mentioned yet is it's actually a sci-fi, because it's set on Mars in the future.
Okay, now here's where the Sunrise part kicks in.
And so, yeah, the American Idol style show is called Mars Brightest. And yeah, like the main girl, like at the very beginning, she's like talking about how she idolizes, I forget what her name is, one of the pop stars from the 80s, who ran away from home at 17 to get big. But yeah, she like is influenced by that, and she stows away on the like the light rail they have there, which has like the passenger compartments on it, and on top is like a place for transporting livestock, sort of thing. And there's like a decent amount of like future tech in there, because it's set fairly far into the future, I guess. Though I guess they're using their own year system on Mars. Because essentially it's like Mars Brightest 0049 sort of thing. So it's a really, really cool show. And yeah, the way it all comes together for this first season and ends pretty well. And that tournament actually has some really neat, like, different styles. Like, they don't sing any, like, music, at least that I've heard about before. But some of the people are doing voices for the singing are actual musicians and such. And the way they go through this whole tournament thing is just crazy and ridiculous. And the way they have, like, there's one of the performers who claims they're inhabited by the soul of the universe, so that when they start performing, they are technically dead and inhabited by the soul of the universe. And sort of as they're doing this, like their suits like lights up in really interesting ways. And they play a lot with like that sort of stuff with AR tech and all that. And there's a DJ that shows up, DJ Erdogan, who is just a stuck-up jackass. And he shows up frequently throughout the show because he's like the biggest artist on the planet sort of thing. And it's a really fun show. People should check it out if you're into any of that stuff. Not really checked out anything else just yet. I kind of watched a few minutes of Cannon Busters and figured I'd come back to that. As for games, not really been doing much streaming because I've just been super busy with work. Kind of getting home late, not really having much energy or time for streaming. The only thing we did was the Dreamcast anniversary stream on Sunday. It was a lot of fun. Kind of playing a bunch of that stuff and finally figuring out how C-Man works. So that makes me actually want to do like a legit C-Man stream. It's just kind of same format where we're just doing what we need to do each day and then saving and changing the time clock to the next day. Kind of thing, but now that we know, that you kind of just sit at the beginning, wait for everything to play out, instead of just being like, oh, let's just move to the next day, sort of thing, just wasting time like that. I'd actually like to get further in that instead of just having the mutant fish babies making their weird noises and shit, just yelling stuff at them. I'd like to definitely do a bit more than that. Been playing some Torchlight 2, just working my way through that some more. So far, so good. I got a Nilo setup where I've built up some of my skills to focus more on wands, since I'm an Ember Mage. So I'm essentially a mage there. And essentially, like, as I use the wands for the basic attacks, like, random effects will just start happening. Like, asteroid falling from the sky, or just wind stuff, all that sort of stuff. I just pick random ones to start throwing at enemies I'm attacking and all that. But, yeah, kind of just focusing on some of the stuff I have there and just keep working through that game. Also been playing more Catherine. So it's definitely a Japanese game because I got to the end and then it's like, all right, we're going to keep going and fully explain like what all is going on here. And then you got a boss there, and I wouldn't be surprised if there's more beyond that. Yeah, so I got like the conclusion of the main part of the story of that game, with him resolving the whole conflict between these three Catherines. And then it's like, all right, we did that. We're going to just move on to the next logical step of explaining what all happened here with the nightmare stuff and all that, who's really behind all this stuff, because it's an anime game. It's got to explain everything and make it take way longer than it should. So I'm working my way through this next night. I think one more stage, same final stage, could be lying. And basically, since I'm on a PS4, it's they've made sure you can't take any screenshots or video of this area for whatever reason. Because that's Atlas for you.
Yeah. Not like that's going to stop you.
When Laughing in Avermedia.
Up to it.
I got stuff hooked up, but I'm just... Yeah. I was more looking at taking shots of the questions they ask. Like how the answers look. Because some of them don't make any sense for how they're set up, but maybe they... Because it's like, oh, ask a question, and it's like, oh, here's how everybody answered, here's how men answered, and women answered. And it's like the percentage for the everybody doesn't make sense with the other two. So I guess it must be, because it says for the first time, so I don't know if there are people on a second run that are somehow able to answer the same questions and feed into the whole thing. I don't know. I don't know how that stuff gets factored into it. So, but yeah, I figured out some really tough puzzles and basically just yelling at the game like, fuck you with this shit. I did your fucking dirty work with these sort of really tough puzzle setups they have. And I think I only got one more, but I don't know. They're on the phone. You can look at the list of movies for each day, and there's two more question mark days, I think. But also, I was playing it last night. I was like, oh, I'll get through here, and then I went on a series of cutscenes that last like 45 minutes. I was like, I need to go to bed. You need to stop this at some point. Somebody needs to stop this. Stop and the game madness. Eventually got to the point where I could start mingling with like the few people remaining in the bar and sort of finish up storylines. I guess I'd started with some of the characters you meet in the other world, the nightmare world, and wrap up their stories, which have trophies tied to them. There's others, like three others that I didn't do because I didn't talk to people in the right way or whatever. I don't know. But yeah, that's been kind of it. And probably doing a stream tomorrow. I have no idea what we're going to stream. I was hoping to get Borderlands 3 in from Gamefly today, but I guess I'll get that Monday. But otherwise, yeah, I'll figure something out. At some point, I'm going to do a shmup stream and have, like, Phil and maybe Pat on. Because I want to show you Ryden 5, Phil.
Yeah.
Because that game is madness. It's like, hey, what if we have a regular shmup and then we'll just put a bunch of bullshit on all the sides and have you play with other people?
Mm-hmm.
No reason.
Like, you can compliment people and send them, like, bonus power-ups or whatever. Shit, it's like, this is just weird as fuck. And you especially said you didn't know that existed until I mentioned it.
Yeah. And then it was on sale, but it was on sale when I had no money, so...
Yeah.
That's irritating.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool game, just in that legacy, but also just like, this is, I guess, what modern shooters are like now. Or it's just, we gotta give you all the things because we don't want you looking at anything else but the screen. We want you to pay attention to all these numbers and shit. We'll play some of those and maybe some older stuff I have.
Yeah.
So I got some of the stuff that's on the hamster arcade class. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the Neo Geo stuff has been on sale, like Aero Fighter 2, I think, and some of the others. So I got some other stuff we could definitely play. But that Raiden 5 stuff is what I want to focus on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been kind of it.
All right. My turn.
Yep.
All right. Well then. Well, I finished Astral Chain. No, it's actually not a terribly long game. But I certainly enjoyed every bit of it, so I'm hoping I'll have my review finished by tonight and have it up tomorrow afternoon. But yeah, that game gets stupid hard towards the end. I'm not gonna lie. Which, I mean, that's kind of par for the course for these types of games from Platinum. Yeah, you got to have some serious reflexes towards the end there to survive that last boss battle, because it's basically two giant boss battles with no rest in between.
Oof.
Yep, and there's a whole mission you have to go through before you can get to them. And, you know, so when you go to get your supplies at the beginning, that's it.
Yeah, I love those point of no return moments that they put in these games.
Yeah. But, so since that's done, I went to GameStop Friday and I've been playing Borderlands 3.
How is it?
It's Borderlands.
It seems like the good and the bad thing about it is, like, it's very much another Borderlands game, but it's also, it hasn't changed much.
Yeah, which, for me, that's not a problem, because,
no,
hey, it's more Borderlands. I already loved Borderlands, so
yeah.
I got more Borderlands. I will say, I mean, some of the character animation has improved from last time, but, yeah, it's still Borderlands. But yeah, so like the storyline around this time is that, you know, you're another vault hunter, and a quartet of vault hunters, where you get to choose one to play. And basically, whereas like if you remember in Borderlands 2, you know, the primary antagonist was Handsome Jack, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this time it's the Calypso twins who are the head of this thing called the Children of the Vault, which is a gigantic cult that all of the various bandits and psychos that, you know, the game are famous for have joined up and worship them as gods.
Yeah.
It's, yeah. it is completely insane.
Yeah, and they use, like, social media and stuff to do it, and it's just weird.
Yeah. It is legitimately hilarious, though, as a Borderlands game should be. But, yeah, it's, like I said, I've only been playing it for one night, so. Yeah, I mean, holy crap, that game is amazing. I mean, I say it's amazing. It's Borderlands 3. I'm gonna be happy. But, yeah, like Chris said, you're the big, sort of dividing line here is, are you ready for more Borderlands? Because that's all it is.
Yeah.
I think how much you've bought into, like, the games have been influenced by it and taken it to new places, like Destiny, sort of having the more MMO aspects to it and connectivity and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, Borderlands does nothing like that.
Yeah. Which, for the record, I'm completely fine with. Yeah.
But, like, people have been talking about since the first game, it's like, oh yeah, the sequel's got to be Border Worlds. You open it up.
Well, that is what happens this time.
Yeah.
Because now that you got the map that shows where all the other vaults in the galaxy are, you can actually go to those other places. So, yeah it is Border Worlds now, basically.
Yeah, but I think more in like, less like a local co-op game that you can take online, more like an online game that you can sort of more easily co-op mm-hmm. with people and interact and have a community and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I did see I think it was the Hard Times did an article saying Borderlands 3 script written completely in one day after spending time surfing Know Your Meme.
Yeah. But so basically this game is like, it's a good like a few years after Borderlands 2. So, like, for example, and, you know, like, all the characters have basically aged in real time. So, like, if you remember Tina from Borderlands 2, the crazy little psycho who likes blowing things up, she's in this game. She's a young adult now. She still likes blowing crap up. And she wears bunny ears now for some reason. Just because. but yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's Borderlands. If you like Borderlands, you're going to love Borderlands 3. So, other than that, you guys know about the education stuff I've been doing, right?
Yeah,
I took the final exam for it this week.
Congrats.
How'd it go?
I don't know yet.
Okay.
I'm going to be talking with my student counselor, Tuesday afternoon, and they're going to be letting me know how I did. And the thing is, I'm fairly confident in my performance, but the good thing is if I didn't pass it the first time, I've got like three more times to try again. So, and, also good thing is, you know, depending on, her name is Kirsten, by the way, but she'll basically, go through my exam and she'll see, you know, like, this is the part you did fantastic on. This is the part you need to improve on. And then what happens is that after I pass this final exam, I'll have one more conversation with my student counselor. And then CareerStep, which is the company that's been doing this, will send me a voucher. And I will be using that voucher to be taking the national exam for one of the two certifying organizations for medical coders.
Hmm.
Yeah. And the thing is, they only put those exams out a couple times a year, so I'm not sure yet when I'll be able to actually take it. So, but other than that, yeah, just doing my usual reading. I finished Speaker for the Dead. I've told you guys about that. That's the
The sequel to Ender's Game.
Yeah. So I started reading Xenocide, which is the sequel to Speaker for the Dead. And it's basically about, so like, I would say something about spoilers, but for what, these books are like, what, over 20-something years old?
Yeah.
basically, at the end of Speaker for the Dead, Ender actually brings the Hive, you know, the, well, I think they're the Formix, that's like their actual proper name, the Formix.
Yeah.
And if you remember, what ends up happening at the end of Ender's Game is that he kind of sort of accidentally, even though he didn't know he was actually doing it, kind of wiped out the Formix from the face of the universe. It's a long story, but basically what happens is he's playing like one of those war games that, you know, they play all throughout Ender's Game. But it turns out it's one of those things where it's not actually a simulation. He's actually been piloting actual ships the whole time. Yeah. Well, turns out that between then and Speaker for the Dead, he actually found the last Formic Hive Queen in existence. And while he decides to make his home on a new planet called Lusitania, which is where there's a human colony with another alien species that's called the Pequeños. He decides that he's going to let the Formix respawn there on Lusitania. And so now, on Lusitania, there are now humans, Pequeños, and the Formix all living together in relative harmony. And the Galaxy Congress is not happy about that. So, by the time of Xenocide, they are sending a punerary force. Also, there's like a lot of like weird religious shit too, but that's Orson Scott Card. That's par for the course. But anyway, so other than that, oh yeah, I've also been rereading Ancillary Justice.
Imperial Wretch.
The Imperial Wretch. Again, that whole book it's a great story, but again, it's one of those things because, again, the Wretch don't really view gender the same way that ours does and the kind of binary matter that we do. Nope. So they always sort of default to female pronouns. So sometimes you have to keep track of who actually is and isn't female.
Yeah. And sometimes you can go through the entire book and still not be sure.
Yeah. But it's good either way. Mm. I mean, it won a boatload of awards for a reason. Other than that, Netflix. I don't know if any of you guys have watched it yet. There's this documentary series they've got on there now called The Family.
No.
Okay, so basically there's an organization here in the United States that's called The Fellowship. And The Fellowship are the people behind, you've probably heard of the National Prayer Breakfast. Mm. Yeah, they're the organization behind that. Mm. And they've been around pretty much like a long time. They originally started during the Great Depression, specifically to oppose the New Deal. And they've been, and the thing is that the reason they are so, the thing about them is they have this oath of secrecy that they take. So them and their leaders tend to do everything they possibly can to stay out of the public eye. So it gives them this weirdly sinister reputation that they, may or may not necessarily deserve, but it's definitely true that they've done stuff like they helped get involved with American Customs and Immigration so that they could help various former German Nazis immigrate to the U.S. They were heavily involved with leaders like Suharto and Idi Amin and stuff like that. If you get a chance, you gotta watch it because it's harrowing stuff. Hmm. That's about it. Anybody got anything else they want to add before we move on?
Actually, I have a quick Netflix recommendation for anybody that's wanting some really interesting sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movie on there called I Am Mother.
Mm-hmm.
Seen it. Mm-hmm. It's fucking good.
Yes, it is.
Yes. So, it's very clearly that it was a very low budget production, but you won't care about that because the story is just so damn good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are layers upon layers in this story that you're probably going to have to watch it a couple of times before you catch on to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Very well written, very very nicely produced for the money that they had. Highly recommend this one. So, yeah, I Am Mother. Watch it.
Cool.
Yeah. All right. So, I guess then it is now time to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, and that's Brandon's Random Factoid. So, I want to ask anybody here, have you guys had people in your family who have suffered from mental illness of some kind, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that can be anything from like just regular old clinical depression to like hardcore paranoid schizophrenia.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously the thing about mental health in this country is it's one of those things we constantly try to sort of push under the rug.
Yeah.
Even though we really, really, really shouldn't.
Yeah.
I think it was a doctor. My doctor told me, said you should always treat the neck up the same way you would treat the neck down.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Yeah. So have any of you guys ever had anybody in your family who actually does suffer from paranoid schizophrenia?
No, not that.
No.
Nothing that.
Well, Fortunately, I haven't either. Hmm. But I do know some people who have. And so, do you guys know, like, what exactly the actual definition of schizophrenia is? Yeah, it's a kind of mental illness that is specifically characterized by three things. Abnormal behavior. So when people think of abnormal behavior, you know, think of things like lining your room with tinfoil or, you know, finding patterns in places that aren't there. Another is strange speech or like garbled speech, which you can sometimes see if you've ever heard the term word salad before. That's the term for a person who is trying to get their thoughts, you know, onto paper, but because of how scrambled their reality is, it comes out extremely random and garbled. And then finally, there is the decreased ability to understand or perceive reality. So people will say, you know, that's like hallucinations. They don't have to necessarily be visual hallucinations either. It can be stuff like oral hallucinations, you know, voices, as people would say. But the thing about schizophrenia is, throughout all the times that it's been recorded, there have been some particular characteristics in these, specifically when pertaining to the delusions that a paranoid schizophrenic will have, that constantly comes up again and again. And a lot of this has to do with the fact that schizophrenics tend to perceive the idea that their brain and mind is open and completely exposed so that everyone can see or read their thoughts. And this can, yeah, and there is one way, as going so far back, farther back than you would actually consider, a thing that they always conceive, they give it different names, but it's always something that comes up. And back in the 1930s, a psychoanalyst by the name of Victor Tausk gave this thing a name. They called it the influencing machine. So, you know, a lot of times with people who have paranoid schizophrenics, who are paranoid schizophrenic, they will perceive some kind of conspiracy controlling some enormous, like, supercomputer, you know, that's like reading or manipulating their thoughts or just screwing with their day, you know? And you would think that this would be something that would be pretty recent, like, because, you know, how long have we had computers? Like the, you know, like after World War II at the earliest,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It actually goes back a lot farther than that, believe it or not. We may not have always had computers, but we did have machines of varying complexity. And just as far back, there have been people who have suffered from paranoid schizophrenia and have delusions of such a machine. I'm going to talk to you about a gentleman by the names of James Tilly Matthews. James Matthews was a tea broker from London. He was originally from Wales, and he was of Huguenot descent. And in 1797, yes, that far back, like the French Revolution was happening as it was going on, he was committed to the Bethlehem Psychiatric Hospital. Basically, what had happened is that he had basically, I mean, but first thing what you need to know is that because of the stuff that was going on in France at the time, you got to remember that kind of thing had like major repercussions all over Europe. Because if the monarchy in France fell, it meant that all the other ones could fall too. So by this point, he had, whether it was from just stress or, you know, it was just something that he had experienced off and on for years, it finally came to a head in the 1790s. So basically what happened is Matthews had traveled to France to try and mediate the conflict that was going on in the French Revolution at the time. There was the two camps, as you call them. There was the Jacobins, which were the radicals, and then you had the Girondists, which were more moderates. He failed, basically. And because he had done this mediation, by the time the Reign of Terror started, he had fallen under suspicion of being a Girondist sympathizer, which meant that if that was possible, they could have taken him to the guillotine. So he finally fled France back to London in 1796. After
they really liked the guillotine right around this time.
Yeah. He had been in prison for 3 years and he finally just left because at that point his mental health basically had seriously declined. And they said, you know what? This guy's a lunatic. Let's just let him go. So then when he came back to London, he started writing these weird letters to, the various officials in the parliament. During a debate at the House of Commons, he shouted treason very loudly from the public gallery. He was then, of course, arrested as, you know, public disturbance. And then he was put to a psychiatric hospital in 1797. So the reason why all of this is specific is, you know, important is because he's literally the first fully written and described example of paranoid schizophrenia that we actually have in the medical dictionary. In the medical field. There had been suspected instances beforehand that people had thought, but this is like the first one where we actually have a guy that we could talk to, that he actually could express, you know, how he viewed the world. And this ended up getting put down in a book by a Dr. John Haslam called Illustrations of Madness. And this is important. This particular text is important for two things. One, it has Matthews actually describe his delusions. And two, we have a drawing from him that helps illustrate this delusion.
Uh-oh.
All right. So I'm going to show you this little picture here, and I'm going to describe what it is, what you're seeing. And this is from Matthews himself. He actually drew this illustration at the doctor's request. Hold on, let me put it in here. Here we go. All right. So what you're looking at is Matthews' illustration of a machine he called the heirloom. This is according to Wikipedia. Matthews believed that a gang of criminals and spies skilled in pneumatic chemistry, for those of you who don't know what pneumatic chemistry is, that's basically based around the study of gases and matter and their various chemical reactions. Yeah. So he says, skilled in pneumatic chemistry, had taken up residence at London Wall and Moorfields, which is close to Bethlehem, and were tormenting him by means of rays emitted by a machine he called the heirloom, or gaseous charge generator. The torments induced by the rays included lobster cracking, during which the circulation of the blood was prevented by a magnetic field, stomach skinning, and apoplexy working with the nutmeg grater, which involved the introduction of fluids into the skull. His persecutors bore such names as the middleman, who supposedly operated the heirloom, the glove woman, and Sir Archie, who acted as repeaters or active warriors to enhance Matthew's torment or record the machine's activities, and their leader, a man called Bill, or the King. Matthew's delusions had a definite political slant. He claimed that the purpose of this gang was espionage and that there were many other such gangs armed with heirlooms all over London, using pneumatic practitioners to, quote, pre-magnetize potential victims with volatile magnetic fluid. according to Matthews, their chief targets, apart from himself, were leading government figures. By means of these rays, they could influence ministers' thoughts and read their minds. Matthews declared that Sir William Pitt was not half susceptible to these attacks, and held that these gangs were responsible for the British military disasters at Buenos Aires in 1807 and Walcheren in 1809, and also for the Nore Mutiny of 1797. Now, there is good news to the end of the story. In 1814, Matthews was moved to Fox's London House, a private asylum in Hackney, where he became a popular and trusted patient. His delusions appeared to have finally stopped. The asylum's owner, Dr. Fox, regarded him as sane. Matthews then continued to live at the asylum, no longer as just a patient, but just as a guest, and he assisted with the bookkeeping and gardening until he finally passed away on the 10th of January, 1815. So
interesting.
Yeah. So basically this illustration is sort of his diagram of how this supposed heirloom supposedly worked. So you'll notice at the center, there's that little guy who's controlling it. That's supposed to be the quote unquote middleman. The chemicals that they're using to create this particularly weird illustration are supposed to be in those barrels that are hooked up to the machine over on the left. And you'll notice those gray sort of smudges coming out. Those are supposed to be the rays of people being tormented by the machine. And you'll notice a little person, like sort of right here in the middle, that looks like he's sitting next to some windows or something. That's supposed to be the bookkeeper. So yeah, turns out that the whole idea of like people having delusions of a machine that's controlling their minds, actually far older than computers.
Wow.
Yeah. That is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah. Yeah, so join me next time. I'm probably going to do some more stuff on this subject, specifically paranoid schizophrenics who were also artists. Because even there, again, you'll start seeing certain factors that keep coming up more in every single time.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's now time to get on to the show proper. And as always, we must start off with our assholes of the week. And this week, our assholes of the week are the Supreme Court, who decided to allow the administration to block Central Americans from asylum. For now.
Yeah.
That for now thing is important, by the way, because there's a bit of an addendum to this.
But yeah, this allowing nationwide enforcement of a new Trump administration rule, it prevents most Central American migrants from seeking asylum in the United States. And yeah, as you know, most of them are fleeing violence and poverty.
Gang violence, civil war.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Yeah.
But yeah, of course, Trump was happy, tweeted, big United States Supreme Court win for the border on asylum. Kind of falls out of English there at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Well, most of the time he's not speaking English, so.
Yeah. Let's see. Justice Sotomayor said, once again, the executive branch has issued a rule that seeks to upend longstanding practices regarding refugees who seek shelter from persecution.
Mm.
Yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah. Yeah, not really much more to...
Yeah, ACLU is working on trying to get this overturned.
Yeah, and they probably will. Because again, they kind of left it open at the end there on whether or not they can revisit this in the future. So, yeah. All right, so yeah, but we do have our hero of the week. So, and it's Chrissy Teigen.
Yeah, so... let's see, NBC News did a bit of a special with Lester Holtz and John Legend and Chrissy Teigen sort of doing something about the country's broken criminal justice system. Which, of course, Trump is always watching things to see what he can get mad about.
Yeah.
Decided to tweet out, let me get the full thing here. Okay, when all the people pushing so hard for criminal justice reform are unable to come even close to getting it done, they came to me as a group and asked for my help. I got it done with a group of senators and others who would never have gone for it. Obama couldn't come close. A man named Van Jones and many others were profusely grateful at that time. I signed it into law, in all caps, he says that. No one else did, and Republicans deserve much credit, but now it is passed. People that had virtually nothing to do with it are taking the praise. Guys like boring musician John Lynn at John Legend and his filthy-mouthed wife are talking now about how great it is, but I didn't see them around when we needed help getting it passed. Anchor, in quotation marks, Lester Holt, NBC, doesn't even bring up the subject of President Trump or the Republicans when talking about the importance or passage of criminal justice reform. They only talk about the minor players or people that had nothing to do with it, and the people that so desperately sought my help when everyone else had failed. All they talk about now is impeaching President Trump.
He's so petty.
Chrissy Teigen responded, "Lol, what a pussy-ass bitch." Tagged everyone but me. An honor, Mr. President. Then she continues on, "The absolute best part of his tweet is, I literally didn't speak in the special, nor was I mentioned. I'm cackling at the pointless addition of me because he cannot be a bitch. He cannot not be a bitch." Of course,
trending on Twitter.
Basically, people came up with a PABOTUS, pussy-ass bitch of the United States. As his new title. John Legend also responded, "Imagine being president of a whole country and spending your Sunday night hate watching MSNBC hoping somebody, anybody will praise you. Melania, please praise this man. He needs you." And of course, other people responded. Let's see this guy named Chase Mitchell. "The president has gotten away with a lot of stuff, but I truly believe he will regret starting shit with Chrissy Teigen on Twitter." So I responded, "This in itself is an impeachable offense." Let's see, Andy Cohen, "Starting a Twitter war with Chrissy Teigen is pretty much all the proof I need that this dude has lost his marbles. Inviting the Taliban over was a close second." Another guy, Aaron Pruner, "You're really making your wife's anti-bullying campaign a fun one, huh?" And yeah, he basically, you know, outed himself as just a pure bitch of a president.
Yeah. He did that long ago.
Oh yeah. That was a foregone conclusion. It's just
he just found the right person that could put it in succinct words.
Yeah.
So we should just call this episode PABOTUS.
But yeah. All right. So moving on from there, we're going to start with the proper show proper, and the first story for the night. John Bolton got shit canned.
Yay.
And the weird thing is he claims he offered to resign the night before. And that Trump told him, "Let's talk about it tomorrow," and then just announced he was getting fired. So, you know, all the sensible things. But yeah, I think that had happened in such a weird way that Bolton was, they announced like Bolton was going to be at some event that day. So I was like, well, I guess that's not happening. At least not with him.
So
of course he's probably going to go work on Fox News or whatever.
Get a cushy job there.
And so he can speak against Trump or whatever bullshit he wants to spew.
Yeah, once, you know, the Trump train has ended, they're going to need to do what they can to try and, well, you know.
And of course, pretend. Rand Paul is kissing Trump's ass about this. I commend Donald Trump for this necessary action. The president has great instincts on foreign policy and ending our endless wars. He should be served by those who share those views.
I mean, I'm glad that Bolton is gone because he is the most dangerous of neocon warhawks in Washington. This guy has not seen – this man has not seen a patch of sand that he has not wanted to nuke off the face of the earth.
It's true.
And
at the same time, though, I'm inclined to believe his recounting of events in this case.
Yeah. Apparently the reason, and there's been like a bunch of reasons given on why exactly he decided to go. It's people have said maybe it's because of that whole, ditch talk with the Taliban they were supposedly going to have. Others say it's because he, disagreed with, weakening the sanctions on Iran. I've also heard it said that, he fired him because apparently Kim Jong-un said something bad about him, and he decided, apparently he trusts Chairman Kim more than John Bolton. But
we knew that already.
Yeah. It can be one of all three. But now we got to find out who's going to be taking Bolton's place. And that's actually a really scary thought because there's only a handful of people I can think of off the top of my head that are actually worse than John Bolton that he could actually decide to hire. Mm. Like Eric Prince, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, one of his relatives is already in the administration. So, and we know how much nepotism goes on.
Yeah.
Time for Eric Trump.
Oh, God.
We got a story on him a little bit later.
Oh, yes, we do. But anyway, next up, we've got another Republican coming forward who has decided that they want to challenge Trump in the primary next year. Former governor of South Carolina, Mark Sanford. And
that's an interesting one.
Yeah. Mark Sanford. Yes. Should we talk a little bit, just briefly, about who Mark Sanford is?
Mm-hmm.
So, Mark Sanford is a... well, where to begin?
Disgraced governor?
Yeah. Back in 2009, he basically disappeared off the face of the earth for several days. And when it came back, he gave the explanation that he was hiking the Appalachian Trail. Which by itself is like, okay, yeah, whatever. A lot of people hike the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, though as a politician, you would generally want to let somebody know.
Actually, if you're hiking anywhere, you want to let people know.
Yeah.
Because something happens, they're going to need to find your corpse. And, well, you're probably not going to be surprised to know that Mark Sanford was not hiking the Appalachian Trail.
Hmm.
He was actually having an affair with a woman in Argentina.
Oh, the shock. I'm dying.
And then, it gets so much better.
Yeah, because he doesn't deny it. He steers into it.
Yeah, he actually doubles down. He, instead of, like, doing the usual... politician or televangelist who gets, caught doing awful shit and deciding to trot out the wife and kids and beg forgiveness. Instead, he basically went on TV and he blubbered through talking about how the woman he was having an affair with was his soulmate, but he regretted hurting his wife so much. By the way, his wife is super duper rich. Should I also point out that Mark Sanford is one of those values politician douchebags?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that is absolutely relevant.
Mm-hmm.
It's perfect.
Here's the thing. This in no way killed his political chances because he actually got elected to the House of Representatives in 2012.
Yeah.
Even though he actually not only lied about where he was, but he actually misused public funds to do it.
Hmm.
And he's also an Ayn Rand fan, so
Throw him. Oh, fuck him. Yeah.
But yeah, And he's going up against Donald Trump.
The one person on Earth that he has the moral high ground on.
Yeah.
Wow, this GOP race is, it's a thing, isn't it?
And that's only if the GOP doesn't squash it before it happens, because some, I don't think we were bringing it up in today's show yet, but a bunch of states, GOP local headquarters, all the various states, they've actually squashed any chance for a primary, like straight up canceled them. Just so Trump can stay the nominee for the next election. Yeah.
But, that's just begging for one of them to run as an independent.
Yeah, it is. It's also perfectly possible that they kind of know which way the wind is blowing and that he probably doesn't have a chance in hell getting reelected next year.
We hope.
We hope.
Well, we hope.
Hope upon hopes.
We're going to do our damnedest to make that happen.
Yeah. Anyway. Next up. Wilbur Ross. He's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's a Magoo.
Yeah, he looks like the real life version of Magoo. He's also the he was also the plaintiff in one of the largest cases of, I think it was, securities fraud in American history. Anyway, you guys remember that whole bullshit that went down during Hurricane Dorian, where, you know, Donald Trump at some point accidentally talked about how, you know, Alabama was in the way of Hurricane Dorian, and instead of saying, I didn't mean to say Alabama, guys, you know, no, he instead doubled down and actually got a Sharpie and, like, extended the cone of uncertainty into Alabama on the official National Weather Service map.
Yeah.
Well, we now know that apparently Wilbur Ross actually threatened the jobs of people at the NOAA. And he did this under instructions from Mick Mulvaney.
Yep.
To just basically saying that he may fire all, a bunch of people at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration for contradicting Trump's Dorian bullshit.
Yeah.
Because it might hurt his fifis.
Yeah. And science is just an opinion, apparently, to him.
No, science is a thing. It's been well proven to be factual. The methods that you use to actually get there might be unconventional, but it's usually repeatable.
It's true.
Yeah. And so is the local National Weather Service regional office that contradicted Trump's bullshit and upset his feelings. But yeah, a senior administration official told the paper that Mulvaney wanted to set the record straight because he thought the NWS Birmingham, Alabama office had, quote, gone too far when it contradicted Trump's false claim last week.
Oh, God.
According to the paper, Ross called Neil Jacobs, NOAA's acting administrator, and told him to, quote, fix the agency's perceived contradiction of the president. Times previously reported that Ross threatened to fire top NOAA employees if they didn't disavow the tweet.
Did they disavow the tweet? No.
I think NOAA put out something kind of siding with them, with Trump. But then I think eventually all just fell apart. And don't fucking politicize the weather.
Yeah.
When you're trying to help make sure people are as safe as possible.
Yeah. This wasn't really him politicizing the weather so much as just being so utterly petty that he can't admit when he's wrong.
Yeah. That plays in his style of bullshit.
Yeah.
He never apologizes for anything.
No.
Can't just say my bad.
Wrong, not him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's a double down on shit to the point of absurdity, which is how this whole thing has played out.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, and next up, after a sixth death has been has been declared to being related to e-cigs, the Trump administration and the FDA are readying a ban on flavored e-cigarettes.
Oh, regardless of how so hard to figure out.
Let's
do that. Can we do those next too? Yeah. Maybe tack that onto the end of the bill. Nobody will notice.
Sneak it in. Let nobody notice.
You do it with they do it with everything else.
Yeah.
You know.
And I just come in, you know, I mean, if the Sharpie works for Donald Trump, all you got to do is
just write it in on the corner there of the bill. Nobody will notice.
Yeah. Just when nobody's looking, just whip out the Sharpie and go, by the way, no more AR-15s, lol. Basically, the reason is because, well, there's a couple of reasons. The big one is because the thing with flavored e-cigarettes is that kids really like them.
Yeah.
And we're not actually doing, like, we're not exaggerating there.
And the thing about the way that kids use them, though, is they don't use them appropriately.
No, they do not.
You're supposed to just take a puff here and there throughout the day.
Yeah.
But these kids will sit there and just suck on them for like 5-6 minutes at a time.
Yes.
That's going to kill you.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I mean, you could do that for freaking water vapor and it will kill you.
Yeah.
You don't just freaking any kind of gas, you don't just huff on for 6 minutes at a time like that.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And apparently it may or may not be true that, you know, people like Juul Labs were, you know, kind of sort of side-eyeing marketing to the kids.
Shocking.
I mean, don't forget, this is still the tobacco industry we're talking about.
Joe Camel wasn't all that long ago, guys.
Nope. But, yeah, so they're getting ready to ban those flavored e-cigarettes. Anyway.
Breaking news.
All right. We got some, well, not breaking, just rewritten.
Yeah,
somewhat.
I forgot to add this before.
Yeah. So over in North Carolina, they were going to have a vote.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. The GOP managed to trick the Dems into leaving the House before they actually started the vote.
Yeah, this was on 9/11.
Yep.
So they were going to allow them to go to a 9/11 memorial.
Yep.
Events, and I think all the Republicans stayed and a couple of the Democrats did. Just enough to allow them to vote.
Yep.
It's going to overturn the governor's veto of a budget bill. And yeah, see, Democrats claimed that they were told by the chamber's Republican leadership that there would be no votes in the House's morning session on Wednesday. Of course, GOP says they didn't do that, saying they never informed their colleagues there would be no recorded votes. And it's basically some fucking Looney Tunes bullshit.
And unfortunately not unprecedented, because this type of shit happens all the time in state politics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think they had 55 Republicans and 9 Democrats, and they needed 61 to get the vote.
It's actually not... Yeah, this is the reason why, like, so many local politicians have to basically nail their asses to the chair when the House is in session, because if you're, like, you've got to, like, get up to the bathroom, or you're even just looking in another direction, it has not been unheard of for the opposition to vote for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean, like, you know, that, like, literally, like, you know how, like, all these locals, they've, like... They've got it, like, all electronic now, so it's just, like, a button push.
Yeah.
Yeah, they will straight up just reach behind them, and if it's, like, a Republican and there's a Democrat behind them, and the Democrat has either gone off to the restroom, or they haven't even had – they're just looking somewhere, or they're just tuned down to whatever, Republican will straight up just go back and push the no button for them.
Yeah,
like it has happened. It has been caught on tape happening.
Yeah,
yeah, and sometimes it's happened for a guy who died earlier in the day.
Yep,
they didn't know he was dead when they voted for him, but you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, this...
Basically, if you think that national politics is fucked up...
You have no idea.
Yeah, you get down to the state level and it is shenanigans from the top to the bottom.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially when you just go to places like North Carolina where the Republicans are just... They're malicious.
They actually used 9/11 and the grief related to 9/11 to actually trick the opposition party into leaving. Like, that is low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway. Next up, Purdue Pharmaceuticals. You know, the company that Sacklers own.
Yeah.
Mm. They've actually reached a tentative settlement over the opioid lawsuits.
Yeah, it would be in the, let's see, about $3 billion.
Yeah.
Coming from the, or $12 billion over time. $3 billion coming from the Sackler family. And that number involves future profits and value of drugs currently in development. The family would have to give up its ownership of the company and contribute another $1.5 billion by settling another... Those pharmaceutical companies selling another pharmaceutical companies, Munda Pharma. Essentially, they would have to file for bankruptcy for Purdue. And the whole weird thing would also involve there being a new company set up because they're the makers of OxyContin. Mm. And they would be – this new company would be the ones continuing to make that – and using the profits from that to pay off this lawsuit. Seems a real weird thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's funds being shuffled around.
Yeah. It's like, hey, this lawsuit for selling this dangerous drug, we're going to need you to keep selling it to fund this payment of this lawsuit.
Big Pharma is just...
Guillotine. Guillotine.
Yeah.
They're cheap. They're easy to make, and they I'm just saying, they give you. They give one hell of an impression.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there is a new opioid that's being worked on. It's even stronger than that.
Of course, there fucking is.
Yeah.
It's like 10 times stronger, and it's like, why?
Jesus.
Why
Christ.
Do we need that?
Just give hammers to people. Just have them hit themselves in the head repeatedly.
Seriously.
Less dangerous.
So they could go to the hospital and get the OxyContin.
Mm.
This son of a bitch. Oh, wow. Wow. anyway. Next up, the British Parliament has been suspended for the next couple weeks. And, it was, as you can imagine, the last day was pretty eventful.
And the way they shut down their parliament,
mm-hmm.
Is kind of a whole performance.
Yeah, they've got a whole ritual that they have to do.
Because it's all... Because this stuff is set up hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
I figured it would be interesting to kind of go through what's all happened here.
Yeah.
Let's see. Boris Johnson shut this down with the help of the Queen.
And it's possible it's now been suspected. There's been people questioning whether he lied to the Queen to actually get the whole thing suspended in the first place. Yeah,
probably.
Yeah. This is called prorogation.
Mm-hmm.
It happens at the end of each parliamentary cycle, which usually lasts 1 year. As such, many of the antiquated rituals performed by lawmakers and officials were to be expected. The scene began with three advisors appointed by the Queen telling another senior official, a woman named Blackrod, real name Sarah Clark, to summon the House of Commons.
Yeah, the reason cops. they're called, it's a position that they have that's literally called the Black Rod. And
when she tried to get in the comments, mm-hmm. she was met with a shout of, close the door. It's probably slammed in her face. Don't worry, this is all part of the ritual.
Yeah.
She then hammered on the door with her 3.5-foot rod, mm-hmm. which is, as you expect, black and decorated with gold line
mm-hmm.
and a gold orb on it. She knocks on it with that. Then she's let in. This is after 1 a.m. Sort of things start to go off script for this. So John Bercow,
who,
if you've seen any footage of Parliament of a guy yelling over everybody.
He's the red-faced dude going, order! That's him.
Yeah. He was, let's see, he was marauded by lawmakers from the opposition Labour Party who attempted to hold him in his seat and held up signs saying silenced. This is a reference to Johnson's shutting down of Parliament, which they see as an undemocratic power grab. Mm-hmm. Seasoned Parliament watchers had pointed out that if Burkow refused to move from his chair, Parliament could not be suspended. The chamber is a raucous place, but it's usually restricted to shouts of shame and other bizarre verbal outbursts. So the sight of lawmakers having to be physically restrained by staff was rare, if not unprecedented. After a moment of suspense, Burkow did eventually rise and have his say. You know, this is not a standard or normal prorogation, condemning it as an act of executive fiat.
Mm-hmm.
I was met with an uproarious response from ruling conservative party lawmakers, which Burkow responded by repeating, bellow, I require no response from you.
Mr. Matthews, please go home. No one will miss you, sir.
Yeah, at one point he told one lawmaker that I couldn't give a flying flamingo what you think. If you're not interested, leave the chamber, he said. I'm not remotely interested in your pettifogging objection, chuntered inelegantly from a sedentary position.
Wow.
Conservatives then left the chamber to chants of shame on you from the labor benches. Burkow and others then marched to the House of Lords, where all legislation passed as parliamentary cycles read out. And his interesting thing is the clerk responded to each bill by saying Le Reine le veut, which means the Queen wishes it in Norman French.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the British Parliament speaks Norman French during this part of the whole thing.
Yep.
Centuries old language that's still used because some procedures haven't changed much over time.
Yeah, no.
The whole
kidding.
Thing usually be wrapped up by some tipping of bicorn hats and handshakes, but not this year. Still set in the House of Commons. Some labor lawmakers struck up a rendition of the socialist tune, The Red Flag, while yep. Scottish and Welsh members rang out their traditional tunes.
Mm-hmm.
With that, Parliament was prorogued until October 14th. Until then, the Brits may be able to take a collective breath and await the next round of Brexit chaos.
Just, yeah. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. By the way, those who don't know, John Burkow is actually a lifelong Tory.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he had to resign his position when he took up his position as Speaker.
Mm.
But the thing is, even though he's a lifelong Tory, even he's like at a point where he's like, he just doesn't give a fuck anymore. He's like, he's like, you people are a bunch of nutcases. I do not give a crap anymore.
Yeah.
Which comes out in the way he reacts to people.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of why he's become a meme all on his own.
Yeah, which is hilarious because John Oliver features them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Always has to remark that, you know, it's illegal in Britain to feature footage of Parliament in a comedy show.
Yeah.
So when they air that show there, he always talks about, okay, this will be blacked out and show some unrelated footage for the amount of time that segment goes on.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, and for those of you who are wondering what that song The Red Flag is, it's basically the anthem of the British Labour Party. Mm. It's sung to the tune of Old Tannenbaum, you know, Oh Christmas Tree, Oh Christmas Tree, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Old freaking song. Yeah, so people have been suspecting that when Parliament does reconvene, they're going to start up a vote of no confidence on Boris Johnson. And he might end up going down in history as the shortest term as prime minister in British history.
Congrats. He's got that going for him.
Yeah. With the fewest bits of legislation passed.
Yeah.
So, but yeah. Next up. Some journalists decided that they wanted to talk a little bit with Eric Trump for some reason. And they decided they wanted to contact him via email to sort of introduce themselves. And for some reason, Eric Trump can't work email.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so Eric Trump posted this tweet saying, these are the tactics used by the Washington Post. Jeff Bezos, you should be very proud. Rolling eyes face. So here's the email he sent. Mr. Mull, I'm very sorry to bother. I'm a reporter for the Washington Post, and I cover the Trump Organization as a business. As part of that, I try to make sure every Trump Organization employee has my contact information. You know, the company's so much better than I ever could. I'd like your help to make sure I don't miss something important. If you ever want to get in touch with me, be glad to talk on background, meaning I never use your name in any story or tell anyone else that we spoke. All my contact information is below. Link details on for how to reach me on encrypted apps. Also, if you ever want to send me documents anonymously, you can do it at online at this encrypted site. Or just do it the old-fashioned way, send a no return address package to the street address below. Thanks very much for your time, David Fahrenhold. Mm. And, of course, every comment is like, yeah, that's normal for any investigative journalist.
Yeah. That's like, that's how that works.
And he took it as some sort of, I don't know, insult.
Yeah. Like he was apparently he's as thin-skinned as his dad is.
Yeah.
These
are the tactics that they're using now. They're actually writing cordial emails.
Mm.
Shocking.
So if you'd like to talk about anything, feel free to let me know.
Wow. This is where we are now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, this is where we are in America. You're up there in Canada where shit is... Which is much less chaotic. So,
yeah.
Generally,
well, we're, like
generally,
unless you're in, we're in our election cycle now too. So we're.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So. You also have a Ford in power in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I'm pretty sure your elections actually last a lot shorter than ours do.
Well, yeah, it's like our elections are in December,
and we got our third major Democratic debates with the election.
Yeah,
about 14 months from now?
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm like, I'm not watching this because it has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It really does.
It's just 10 people yelling at each other for a few hours.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Anyway, next up. Actress Felicity Huffman has gotten 14 days in prison over the whole college admission scandal. Keep in mind that there was a woman who was sent to prison for 5 years because she accidentally sent her child to the wrong elementary school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, applied for the wrong school outside of their district.
Mm-hmm.
You can guess that she was black.
Yeah.
Yep.
Of course, Felicity Huffman gets just 14 days, and it's not to say she should be in there for longer. It's that other people have done lesser crimes and have served way more time. But yeah, she's going to get 14 days, $30,000 fine, 250 hours of community service, and a year of supervised release. It's ultimately a slap on the wrist.
Yep.
The U.S. Attorney's Office recommended Huffman be sentenced to 1 month behind bars, followed by a year of supervised release, and a fine of $20,000, but I guess they found another route for that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And yeah, so $15,000 bribe turns into 14 days of prison.
Mm-hmm.
$30,000 fine and 250 hours of community service. So
yeah. Isn't she a millionaire?
Yeah,
she's married to William H. Macy too.
Yeah, just this that story. It just gets worse and worse the more you get into it.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see what Lori Loughlin gets because she did not take any pleas.
Mm.
She thinks she didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah,
so they might throw the book at her or something.
Maybe.
They might after the reaction this gets.
Mm.
All right, next up, we got some archaeological news. So back in the early aughts, there was a group of skeletons in Italy that were discovered during an archaeological dig, and they were called the Lovers of Modena. The reason they were called that is because they were buried while holding hands. It's like, oh, isn't that sweet? The thing is, though, they weren't able to really identify much more than that because it had decayed and had been preserved so badly that, you know, at the time, the technology wasn't there that they could actually tell.
Mm.
But they finally got the technology enough where they can finally analyze who these people were. Mm. And it was two men.
Yep.
Now, keep in mind, this is Rome.
Yeah.
And this was, like, during the twilight era of the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
So.
They could be gay. They could be family.
Brothers. They could have been just buddies. They could have been, soldiers or.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of reasons they could have been doing that.
Yeah. And all of them equally valid.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. That's. It's not, there's nothing really that funny about it, except for the fact that, you know, you can, you know, probably joke like, those stupid social justice warriors attacking our nuclear family some 2,000 years ago.
Yeah. Sort of just making fun of the notion that these two people are buried together. They must be man and wife.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, they were buried holding hands. And the thing about that is, you know, the whole icky, the idea of men getting all icky about physical contact with each other didn't really start until like the 20th century.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
This
is, I mean, the Romans had freaking public bathhouses. That's,
yeah.
You know, they weren't really too bothered by personal contact.
Whoa! There is a caveat to that, and it happened to do with what your position, what your place in society was, and whether what you were a Roman citizen. So, like, they were completely okay with the man-on-man stuff as long as you were the penetrator. If, however, you were like a soldier, or like if you were like a noble or something, and you were the penetrated, it could get you punished with death.
That escalated quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ancient Rome.
Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Yeah. All right. Next up, scientists have discovered a 3.8 million year old human. Well, the 3.8 million year old cranium of a human ancestor that is now the oldest ever recorded.
Yep. Let's see. About 2 weeks ago, the release of two papers describing a nearly complete 38 lakh year old, which is 3.8 million years old, hominin cranium. Paleontologists have been kind of still coming to terms with the findings of what this all means. Hominins are nothing but an evolutionary group of bipedal beings, including modern humans. This discovery of humanity's oldest known ancestor, informally named MRD, has definitely challenged the very foundation of human evolution, which up to now, the earliest species specimens of skulls date back to 20 to 35 lakh years ago. The most famous human ancestor, Lucy, dates back to around 32 lakh years. Named after a famous Beatles song, Lucy discovered in 1974. And yeah, this one goes a little bit further than that. Lucy was then widely considered the oldest human ancestor till now. And so yeah, they discovered MRD in Ethiopia, who both belong to genus Australopithecus. Lucy belongs to a younger species called A. efferensis. MRD belongs to A. anamensis. Findings of their study suggest that A. anamensis and A. efferensis lineage may have overlapped for at least 100,000 years rather than forming preceding the latter as widely believed earlier. So kind of the notion that these two species of human ancestors kind of overlapping versus just being natural evolutions.
You're going to have to redraw that that evolutionary chart at some point. It's starting to look a bit dated now.
It's just a group of ape-like humanoids just fucking all over the place.
Oh, well, I mean, they're basically monkeys. So,
yeah.
I mean, just look at the monkeys that exist now.
Yeah.
Just bigger.
It's in the White House.
But yeah, just, it's just yet another nail in the coffin to the whole concept of young Earth creationism, basically.
Yeah. 3.8 billion. Billion.
Billion.
Would be a little bit too much.
No, I don't think the Earth was even around. But, anyway. Yeah. Next up, the Vikram Lunar Lander, which is India's sort of space project, has actually landed on the moon. The only problem is they can't communicate with it now.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Did they break another one?
No, they lost contact with it, which occurred moments before it set down on the lunar surface. They confirmed it with the orbiter, Chandrayaan 2, which managed to spot the lander using its high-resolution thermal camera. However, they have not reestablished communication with it. Which means they're uncertain of whether or not the lander survive the descent, but they think it just tipped over. We have the location of the lander, as they say. Lander Vikram on this lunar surface, and the orbiter has clicked a thermal image of the lander, trying to establish contact. It will be communicating soon. That's what they said a few days ago. But they say it's premature to say anything. Yeah, so they think it might have just kind of tipped over in that loss of communication.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's
crashed and then come back up. And there's a lot of reasons that it
could. Yeah. And so yeah, they're gonna keep working on this, trying to figure out what all happened. But yeah, they say there were concerns that Vikram failed to make a soft landing on the surface and actually crashed, but they confirmed this. They confirmed as of this past weekend that that was likely to be the case. So it had some sort of hard landing that just caused the systems kind of go out of whack.
Yeah.
Right.
And
but we're overlooking the fact that they actually got something there.
Yeah.
You know, which is pretty
cool. They say they're going to keep working it on this till about the 21st, and that's when they're going to have to give up on it.
And have to come back.
Yeah. Write it off as totaled.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
And now for some science news that's actually really cool and historic, to be honest. NASA's Hubble telescope this week found an exoplanet with water vapor on a habitable zone.
Yeah.
For the first time ever.
Yeah. So they found, let's see, distant planet called K2-18b.
Mm-hmm.
Captured the interest of science all over the world. For the first time, researchers have detected water vapor signatures in the atmosphere of a planet beyond our solar system that resides in the habitable zone. The region around a star in which liquid water could potentially pool on the surface of a rocky planet. And this was done with help of, let's see, the Center for Space Exochemistry Data at the University College London in the United Kingdom. Used data from NASA's Hubble, Hubble Space Telescope to find water vapor in the atmosphere of that planet. A small red dwarf star was around a small red dwarf star about 110 light years away in the constellation Leo. If confirmed by further studies, it'll be the only exoplanet known to have both water in its surface, in its atmosphere, and temperatures that could sustain liquid water on a rocky surface. Liquid water would only be possible if the planet turns out to be terrestrial in nature rather than resembling a small version of Neptune.
I do find it kind of interesting that we're actually finding this kind of stuff. The thing that's really kind of irritating, though, is that we don't have more info. We have water vapor now. We know that.
Yeah.
But we don't know what the surface is like or anything like that. And it's just, now it's that, okay, what else is there? Are we going to focus on this, try to find out, you know?
Yeah, they suggest it may be more hostile to life as we know it than Earth.
Yeah.
It's likely exposed to more high energy radiation.
Yeah.
It also has a mass 8 times greater than Earth's. It means the gravity on the planet would be significantly higher than our planet. So yeah, this definitely be quite a bit of a different kind of planet to what we know.
Might be like one of those weird planets in No Man's Sky where you get there and it's hot populated by giant plant creatures that want to kill you. Don't know. But yeah, it's still cool because the possibility is there. But could be habitable, but
awesome. But yeah, and now for the entertainment portion of the show. Starting off with Apple, they revealed the Apple TV Plus subscription service, and it's going to be launching 1st of November. But of course, that wasn't the only thing that happened there.
Yeah, so with the subscription, it's $5 a month. Which is pretty cheap. The cheapest one of the major ones that are out there. And if you buy one of their new devices they announced, you get a year for free. Which is not a good deal if you weren't going to buy it anyway. Because it's like $60. Like, don't spend $1,000 just to save $60.
Yeah.
It's not a good deal. But it's going to be a monthly rate of $5. Let's see. They're going to offer a 7-day trial for that, for anyone who wants to try it. I said most of its series will premiere with three episodes, followed by one new weekly episode. Yeah, one new episode weekly.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like that. I kind of like that idea, where it's like you get three episodes right away to see if you're into it, and then you kind of still have that, you know, weekly water cooler thing that you can do to talk with your friends. But that's it's kind of a neat idea instead of, you know, having everything at once and binging.
But I still kind of see it as like a very cynical way, is like they want it weekly so that you have to stay on for months at least to finish that season of the thing.
Yeah, if it's a 6-episode season, then you're committed for a month at least.
Yeah. See, it's unlikely that Apple's most anticipated shows will be available for most people to binge during a 1-week free trial period. It's not until later this year in 2020 when entire seasons are complete.
Mm.
But starting on Tuesday, customers who purchase a new iPhone, iPad, Apple TV, iPod Touch, or Mac will get a 1 year of Apple TV Plus for free. Current Apple device owners aren't grandfathered in for the year-long free subscription.
No, screw you, people.
They name 9 total titles that will be available at launch on Apple TV Plus. All these, as they say, all of these incredible shows for the price of a single movie rental. This is crazy. It's like, no, that's a subscription service.
The spin.
Yeah.
Oh.
It'll have a TV download plus, a download option for watching its originals offline. It'll be available to watch on some competitor devices too. Apple's TV app, Restream Apple TV Plus program, is available on smart TVs from Samsung. It's supposed to come later this year to Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and smart TVs from Sony, LG, and Vizio.
Mm-hmm.
But it isn't available on any mobile devices except for iPhones and iPads.
Yeah. One thing they don't mention in there is that tv.apple.com in the browser will work. So you will be able to watch that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you could potentially use like the Android browser and go to the website web view and watch it that way. But they're not.
But you're not getting really any customized version of it.
No, you're just getting the web
for version. Android.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah, it'll be the cheapest version of that, cheapest subscription service out there, with Disney Plus coming out about a week or so later for $7 a month.
Yeah, I think it would kind of need to be, at least with the lineup that they got so far.
They don't really have a ton.
Yeah, they got like 9 shows.
They announced 9 shows. There's C-S-E-E, a post-apocalyptic thriller starring Jason Momoa. There's The Morning Show, which is a drama about morning news broadcast starring Reese Witherspoon, Jennifer Aniston, Steve Carell.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. There's Dickinson, which is a comedy about poet Emily Dickinson starring Haley Steinfeld.
Nope.
For All Mankind, a comedy
about Emily Dickinson.
Mm.
Yes.
Has anybody here read Emily Dickinson before?
Yeah, they got trailers linked for a bunch of these, so people can check them out. It's For All Mankind, a period piece from the creator of Battlestar Galactica that presents an alternate history of the space race.
Yeah. See, that one actually looks good.
There's an Oprah Winfrey series, Sesame Street spinoff, Helpsters, a kids program called Ghostwriter.
Mm-hmm.
Ghostwriter. There's an animated series called Snoopy in Space, which, sure, but I don't have an Apple device. I don't care about Apple. There's The Elephant Queen, a movie that the company acquired at the Toronto Film Festival.
Hmm.
And they said additional titles were arriving in the months after launch, including Servant, a thriller from Sixth Sense, director M. Night Shyamalan. An Octavia Spencer mystery drama called Truth Be Told. It's Little America, the brainchild of husband and wife screenwriting team Kumail Nanjiani and Emily V. Gordon. There's The Banker, a true story film starring Anthony Mackie and Samuel Jackson, and Hala, a movie produced by Jada Pinkett Smith that Apple picked up at Sundance.
So they're not just producing, but they're also acquiring.
Cool.
Seems like they're serious about it, but whether they'll actually... Well, the kind of stuff that they seem to be going for seems to be more of the, you know, the safe family values kind of shows.
Yeah.
And so it's going to have an appeal to some people, but I think for people who are wanting, you know, more gritty stuff, probably won't find any satisfaction there.
No, they'll go to Netflix.
Yeah.
But anyway. It seems very kind of safe stuff to do for the first, like, wave or two.
Yeah.
see how it goes, and then if they
afterwards, who knows?
If all their iPhone owners buy into it, then they'll have more money to invest into more other more stuff.
Yeah, but please don't buy an iPhone; they suck.
Yeah, or if you do, get an older generation one.
Yeah,
yeah, they announced a bunch of stuff at their event. Let's see, this new iPad, 10.2 inch display.
Yeah, for $350.
$329 here. $350, yeah. Seems like some cheaper pricing here. Like they realize maybe going for $1,000 plus items isn't great all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which is good, I guess.
Yeah.
Let's see. Has a few improvements over the last generation iPad. That's great. There's a smart connector, which I guess if you need another proprietary Apple thing.
Yeah, that's the connected keyboard up to it.
Yeah. Apple Watch Series 5.
Yep.
Sure. If you want to spend that, $400 for the GPS model.
Yeah.
$500 for the GPS plus LTE model.
Yeah. The biggest feature is that the screen stays on all the time now.
Sure.
Because, you know, if you want to, if you buy a watch, it's helpful that you, that it tells the time when you want the time.
That's hopefully not at the cost of the battery.
Yeah, well, apparently it's got really good battery life now, so.
Yeah.
I'm not buying one.
Let's see, there's iPhone 11, successor to the iPhone XR.
Yep.
6.1-inch LCD display, $700. Dual camera system.
Yeah.
For slow-mo selfie videos, which they're calling slow-fies. As everybody else calls them, slow-mos.
Oh, God.
They also announced professional phones. iPhone 11 Pro, iPhone 11 Pro Max.
I'm sorry, but Pro Max three sounds camera like some system. Sort of medication.
Yeah.
It's when it gets inserted rectally.
Yeah.
Let's see. Three camera system, complete with the telephoto, ultra-wide, and regular lens. Each of the three cameras is capable of shooting in 4K resolution at 60 frames per second, and an onstage demo showed upcoming software can record different subjects through each lens.
Yeah, that I thought it was really cool.
Seems neat, but then the part where it's an Apple phone where the base model is, 64 gigs?
The Pro is, I think the base one is 128.
Okay. Yeah. Still not great for 4K 60 video.
Mm.
You're potentially shooting multiple angles.
Yeah.
You need more storage than that if you're going to, market these as pro phones.
Yeah.
Whereas, these people should eventually just pick up actual cameras for the prices they're asking here. Let's see. Yeah, the Pro has a 5.8-inch OLED. Pro Max is 6.5-inch. Starting at $1,000.
Yep. So they still got their $1,000 phone.
Yeah, it's for pros.
I love how they spun it this year instead of saying it was the iPhone 10 and 10s, 10s Max and 10R, trying to justify the R. They just went, okay, this is the iPhone 11. This is the base. This is the more expensive one. This is the Pro. And this is the really expensive one, the Pro Max. So.
Yeah.
At least they're being more honest about it.
Yeah, they're realizing that marketing actually matters instead of just like, here's the new iPhone, give us the money.
Yeah.
There's also the Apple Arcade, but we'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yes.
There's more interesting stuff there, actually.
Yeah. And next up, J.J. Abrams and his Bad Robot production company have actually signed an exclusive deal with Warner Media to produce new IPs.
That's the deal they've been working on for the last little bits. Rumored to have a bunch of different companies working on a deal, like Netflix, Amazon. I think even Apple's rumored to be giving them more than what they got here.
Mm-hmm.
But they got, let's see, the agreement says is in the line of $250 million as opposed to the $500 million estimate that was out there, which I think is what Apple's supposedly giving them. But yeah, they are going to be working on film and TV stuff with Warner, And it's going to go through 2024, and they're going to be exclusive to them for that stuff. Doesn't mean that he's not going to work on other stuff. It's just their new IPs are going to be coming out of that.
Yeah.
So he can still work on Star Wars or whatever else he wants.
Yeah. That's There's no speculation on what they might be working on. I didn't see any in that article.
I don't think so.
Mm. Yeah, thought you might have seen some from elsewhere or whatever.
Yeah. But anyway, J.J. Abrams, he's one of those people in Hollywood I have a really mixed view of. Because there are points where he shows that he's a fantastic film member, and there are other times where it kind of looks like he's phoning it in.
Mm-hmm.
And I really just don't
know. It depends on how interested he is, I think.
In the project, yeah.
It will also say, just depend on whether he's directing or producing, like, that sort of thing. Like, seems like kind of where it starts to
degrade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, change, like, how you should feel about the product.
Yeah.
That they're presenting.
Yeah.
I will say, though, he did produce one of my favorite books ever that I've ever read. Mm-hmm. And it's a book he co-wrote with a guy named named Doug Dorse, and it's called S. It's just the letter S, period. And it's an amazing piece of metafiction. Basically what it is it's a meant to look like an old library book that's called – it's – like a novel called The Ship of Theseus written by a mysterious writer named V.M. Straka. And it's made to look like, you know, like it's literally like an old library book. Like there's the Dewey Decimal tag on it. There's like a library, you know, stamp inside of it. You know, the outer looks a little worn. And there's basically two stories. There's the actual book. And then there's all these, like, liner notes and highlighted parts that are made by these two college students who are trying to figure out who this guy is, this author, like, who their true identity was. And on top of that, there's all this supplementary material that's tucked away in between the pages, like pamphlets and bookmarkers and library cards and stuff like that. It's pretty damn cool.
Sounds like something I should check out.
Yeah, if you do, you need to get a new version, because if you try to get it used, some of that stuff's going to be missing. But anyway. And next up, James Gunn has revealed what the cast for the new rebooted Suicide Squad is going to be.
Yeah, no specifics on,
I have,
like,
no idea who these fuckers are.
Yeah, like what characters they are.
The best.
Yeah.
As he says in the tweets, don't get too attached. Because if you know the Suicide Squad, like, a lot of the characters will die.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's like John Cena, Jai Courtney, Nathan Fillion, Pete Davidson, I guess his brother Sean Gunn, Taika Waititi, Peter Capaldi, Viola Davis, Idris Elba, Margot Robbie, Michael Rooker. Some good stuff here. Some good people here. But so, like, what is this, 24 people?
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, if half of them are going to die by the end of the movie, you kind of need the extra cast.
Yeah. But, yeah. Seems like should be a pretty good cast. That'll be out August 6th, 2021, is what they have down right now.
Well, I mean, it'll definitely be better than whatever abortion that last one was.
Yeah. So.
So it's not exactly going to be a high bar to scale. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. But it's in James Gunn's hands, so
You've
got a better chance.
Yep.
Anyway. And finally, last story for the night. Lifetime Television for Women has already made the movie version of the college admission scandal, and we have a trailer.
Yeah, it sure is a trailer for a Lifetime movie.
Yeah, that's just...
It'll be out October 12th.
Is Meredith Baxter Burney in it anywhere?
I don't know. I don't know if they have a cast listing here for this.
Oh, because there's like three or four people that always show up in these stupid movies.
Yeah,
let me see if I can get a cast for this.
Okay, it should be on IMDb.
Yeah, but also that title is not going to be easy for it to parse. Let's see. I think I got Penelope Ann Miller and Mia Kirshner are in this.
Mm-hmm.
Who right. else? Let's see. Canadian actor Michael Shanks. Who else? I don't know if there's anybody else mentioned here.
Nope.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, it's a Lifetime movie, and it's going to be out soon.
Which usually means, well, a couple of things, doesn't it? One, it's going to be low budget. One, two, it's going to be saccharine sweet. And whether or not it's relative to the story or not, a woman will be beaten and or raped at some point.
Accurate.
And it'll be out in less
Lifetime
than a month.
Is where Will Ferrell goes when he wants to do a dramatic role. Let me just put it that way.
Yeah. This is a weird thing to do because, well, technically most of the punishments have not been handed out yet.
Yeah, it's a little early to be running the movie.
Yeah.
But I guess they're just going on the actual things that happened.
So far.
Well, usually what happens with these types of made-for-television type current event movies is they usually have like the tags at the end.
Yeah.
You know, the text at the end is like so-and-so eventually went on to blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
they
yeah.
were sentenced to. Yeah, that's yeah. probably what we're going to end up getting.
Yeah.
And I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks.
Indeed.
Oh, man. So I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you have a question, comment, or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in touch with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for you in the show notes. On top of that, we've also, on top of like Apple Podcasts, you can find our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org. Pretty much any kind of, you know, random podcast aggregator you can think of, there's like a good 6-to-1 chance we're on there. And if they're, and if we're not, just wait a little bit.
Yeah.
We'll be on there soon. So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, Chris Logie, Teresa Sammons. Good night. It's hot as fuck out there, and it's going to be hot as fuck tomorrow.